So hello everyone, Ben Armstrong. I'm here to talk about upgrading your private cloud. Hopefully you're having a good tech ed so far, and hopefully sessions have been good. I am going to be unapologetic. This is going to be a fairly technical detailed session. So I'd like to get started and get moving along. So before I get going with this conversation of upgrading your private cloud to 2012 R2, there are a couple of things that I want to kind of establish up front. The first thing that I want to be really clear about is this is hard. And we still have work to do here. So do not expect me to be like, yeah, it's easy, click a button. No, it's not. This involves planning, this involves work. Also, I want to be really clear, and I speak for most of the development team when I say this, we certainly do not believe that this is, you know, a complete solution today. We're not happy with this story. You know, we've done a lot of work to make this better, to make it possible, but we're also going to be continuing to look at this in the future. You know, all this to say, if I get to the end of this and you come up to me and you say, Ben, that was really complicated, I'm not happy about it, I'm going to say to you, yeah. It's not me with the laser pointer. I don't know who's, someone's pointing a laser pointer at this guy. I don't know, not me. Oh, it was you, you were laser pointing yourself? Okay. So, understand, like, I'm not by any means trying to say that what I'm laying out today is perfect and wonderful and you shouldn't dare criticize it. You know, please feel free to. You know we have more work to do here. The next thing I want to cover is, honestly, there are one of the challenges we have when we talk about upgrading a private cloud deployment is there are many facets. There are many configurations out there. There are many, you know, options and variables and so on. And honestly, if I wanted to cover every aspect of upgrading a private cloud, I think I would need 4 to 5 hours. So today, I'm not going to do that. I am going to step through some very specific scenarios and some very specific options, and I'm going to kind of focus in. You know, all that to say, there's probably going to be stuff that you're here to, in fact, I can guarantee there's going to be stuff that you hear today that's kind of news and changes your thinking about things. But I'm also fairly certain that there's going to be a number of you who are going to be going like, well, he's talking about this configuration, and that's not the configuration I have. Feel free to come up to me afterwards and say, hey, Ben, hey, what about this? What about that? Because just because I don't cover it in the session today doesn't mean that we haven't thought about it. It's just that I only have so much time. So with all that in mind, there are some assumptions that I'm making for this session. First assumption, I am assuming that you want to upgrade your private cloud. I know that sounds like a bit of a crazy assumption, given that the title is Upgrading Your Private Cloud, but I'm not going to try and sell you on 2012 R2 in this release. In this session. My assumption is, hopefully, by now, you've seen the value in 2012 R2 and you're thinking about, yeah, I'd like to get that into my environment. Now, I do not have time to recap all the value of 2012 R2. So I'm assuming you want to upgrade your private cloud. Next one. I'm assuming that you have people using your private cloud. There's a novel idea. And I'm also assuming that you don't want those people to have to know that you're upgrading your private cloud. I mean, I don't think anyone here would relish the idea of having to send out emails to everyone that uses their virtualization infrastructure and saying, hey, I want to do an upgrade. What time works for you? No. You don't want the people who use your private cloud to notice that an upgrade is happening. Buying new hardware in order to upgrade will really slow down the process. You know, this is something that I've been spending a lot of time looking at, because if you've, you know, spent any time working in, you know, server IT, you'll know that today, you know, the average organization, you say, how long does it take you to deploy a new server operating system? And the answer is going to be 9 to 15 months. And I don't know if you noticed, we just released a new operating system in less than 15 months. So that's kind of a problem. So I've spent a lot of time talking to people about this and going, where does that 9 to 15 months come from? And for most people, the major chunk of that 9 to 15 months comes in the moment you have to buy new hardware in order to do the upgrade. Because if you have to buy new hardware to do the upgrade, well, then you're going to need to get a purchase order. And if you're going to need to do a purchase order, you need to have the justification. If you do justification, you have to do the business justification. If you're going to do the business justification, then you have to do all the analysis of the options. You have to do the analysis of the vendors. You have to figure out what storage you're going to do. You're going to have to figure out what storage. And they're 6 months gone. You know, that is easily the biggest thing. So buying new hardware to upgrade, that's a problem. Here's a fun one. Most of you probably have SLAs in place for your private cloud environment. And just because you're doing an upgrade does not mean that you get a free pass on SLAs. Oh, most of you are like, oh, I'm doing an upgrade, so you're not highly available right now. Is that okay? No. You know, this comes back to, you know, you don't want the people who use your private cloud to know that the upgrade's happening. Maintaining high availability throughout the upgrade process is important. Seems reasonable. Here's a fun one. This is an assumption that I'm making, and this is not always true, but it's true most often. I am assuming that guest operating systems are upgraded with a different cadence or process to your virtualization infrastructure. What I'm really saying with this is I'm not going to talk about upgrading the guest operating system today. That's an entire other session that we could go into. My assumption is when you're thinking about, you know, upgrading your private cloud, your focus is on the virtualization infrastructure and getting that upgraded. So with all that in mind, like, let's take all those assumptions. As I said, there are lots of different ways to do a private cloud, and I don't have enough time to talk through all of them. So I am going to talk through a couple of specific deployments and the strategy and the process that you would take for this. So first thing to know, for this session, I'm going to be primarily talking about 2012 to 2012 R2. We are going to talk about 2008 R2 to 2012 R2 at the end. I hate having to say upgrading from R2 to R2. Thank you, marketing people, for your original naming schemes. A lot of what I'm going to be talking about in the first section of the session for 2012 to 2012 R2 is on some level applicable to a 2008 R2 to 2012 upgrade. So actually, can I just get a show of hands? How many people here are running 2012 today? Okay, how many people are still running 2008 R2? Okay, so about 50-50. 2008 R2 people, do not tune out. As I said, a lot of what I'm talking about, even though I'm going to be talking about stuff that's specific to 2012 to 2012 R2, is applicable to both. And at the end, I'm going to be going into some stuff that is specific about moving from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2. The next point to make here is there are scale requirements. So if you go through all the you know, assumptions that I listed, we can meet those assumptions, but only once you hit a certain size. When I come out to these shows and I talk to people, the most common size Hyper-V cluster that I hear about is a 3-node cluster. That's the most common one I hear about. And I'm sorry, you can't upgrade a 3-node cluster and maintain high availability throughout the whole process. It's not big enough. You know, you're going to have to give up on that one. You know, if you're upgrading a 3-node cluster, then yeah, you're going to have a period where you're not highly available. As we're going through this, I'm going to call out a couple of places where I'll say, you know, you'll be able to hit all the assumptions if you're at this scale point. If you're under this scale point, then you've got some decisions to make. Next thing that I'm assuming. I'm assuming that you're using System Center in your environment. Now, I know that most of you are. I know that some of you aren't. That's fine. I'm trusting that you've got, know enough brains that you can figure out how to adapt what I'm talking about to work in a non-System Center environment. I'm going to be talking through the System Center scenario. I'm assuming you're using Hyper-V clusters and that you're either using Windows File Server clusters or CSV. If you haven't picked up by now, if you've been to any of my other sessions, I have a mission to get everyone using Windows Scale-Out File Server Cluster. I may be the Hyper-V guy, but I get accused of being on the SMB team from time to time. And in today's session, I'm going to be trying to sell you on that again. I'll be talking about some of the pros and cons of what this looks like if you have SMB in your environment versus if you don't. So here's kind of the model that we're going to be talking through. System Center for management, Hyper-V for compute, Scale-Out File Server, or CSV, for storage. So the first place to start is actually with System Center. That's the first thing you're going to want to upgrade. There's a simple reason for this. Your first step is you upgrade System Center, and then you use that to orchestrate the rest of the process. You know, if you try and do this backwards, if you try and do your compute first or your storage first, you're going to have a nightmare because you're then going to have to spend a lot of work going back and explaining to System Center what you just did under the covers. You upgrade System Center first, and then you use it to orchestrate the upgrade process so that it is completely aware of what's happening in your environment, and there is no disconnect. So a couple of things to talk about with upgrading System Center. The first thing, and I have to be a little bit careful here, because all the System Center people know who I am and know how to find me, and they get a bit grumpy if I talk trash about their stuff. But I like to do it anyway. So I talked about, at the beginning, you're going to do this upgrade. You don't want the users of your private cloud to notice what's happening. You want to maintain your SLAs. It's actually a very useful activity to sit down and go through your management software and go, okay, given my SLAs, given what people can see, how much downtime can I tolerate? Simple example, most people that I know have, you know, backup services for their private cloud where they have an SLA that basically reads like, yeah, we'll make sure your VMs are backed up every day. So fine, you know, you can now put DPM or your backup software low down in your upgrade list because, heck, you can turn it off for a couple of hours and just do an upgrade. That's not going to impact your SLA. That's not going to cause problems. But it's important that you go through and you understand, hey, given the agreements that I have in place, given the expectations that my users have of me, which ones are the critical ones? Which ones are the ones that I need to understand how to do this as quickly as possible? The next thing to just point out, we have this document today for upgrading to System Center 2012 SP1. We're going to be updating it for R2, and that is there is a very specific sequence order that you should upgrade System Center in. If you go out of sequence, then you can get disconnects happening, and you know, you'll have a world of pain on your hands. So please go read this TechNet article and understand, depending on what System Center components you have, what order you should be upgrading them in. For today, I'm going to focus on the System Center Virtual Machine Manager part. That is the most important part for upgrading a private cloud. The first thing, and this is actually a side note, I should have made this earlier. One thing that I like to point out about this presentation is while I'm talking about how to upgrade a private cloud here, you can actually kind of reverse engineer this presentation. And you can say, listening to what it's saying, I can also figure about how do I design a private cloud so that it is upgradable. Now, I am under very strict guidance that I am not allowed to talk about future release cycles or anything like that. But I will say now, if you are designing a new private cloud right now, and you are not thinking about how am I going to upgrade this in the future on a frequent basis, you're a moron. Seriously. You know, this needs to become part of your planning process, that as you are planning your deployment, you're thinking, okay, you know, Microsoft's going to keep on releasing new versions of Hyper-V. I hope that doesn't come as a surprise to anyone. You know, we're going to keep on releasing new versions of Windows Server, and I need to make sure that the infrastructure I'm deploying and designing today takes this into consideration. So here's a really simple example. System Center Virtual Machine Manager. Boy, is this a lot easier if you put the database on another system. If you put all of System Center Virtual Machine Manager on a single server, the upgrade is actually a fairly heavyweight thing, and you're going to have some downtime. But if you have the database on a separate system to System Center Virtual Machine Manager, you can actually stand up a new System Center installation using 2012 R2, shut down your SP1, and then just point the 2012 R2 at your database, and System Center will import that, and it will immediately know everything about your environment and be ready to go. So a little forward planning here can make this process a lot easier on the back end. So we've got, you know, we've upgraded System Center Virtual Machine Manager. We've upgraded the rest of my System Center suite. My management software is now over. What do we do next? And I actually have this slide here for a reason. This slide here is because of an unresolved argument between me and one of the guys on my team. Because we were working on this, and we actually have different opinions. Me, I would say the next thing you upgrade is compute. You upgrade Hyper-V. Guy on my team, he says next thing you upgrade is storage. You know, you do your storage and then your compute. And we argued back and forth about this, and frankly, we couldn't agree. So I ended up saying, I will put storage next in my deck, but I'll put this slide here because I want to be clear, even though I'm going to talk management, storage, then compute, you can do it the other way around. Heck, if you like taking things risky, you can do storage and compute at the same time. Or conversely, you actually don't have to do everything here. It's something that we expect to see, is we expect to see there are going to be people who go, you know what? I'm going to upgrade management and compute and not storage. And that's fully supported. You know, I would encourage you to upgrade everything so that you can take advantage of all the functionality in 2012 or 2. But at the end of the day, this is an area where you need to sit down, think about your environment, think about what makes sense for you. So with that, let's talk about storage. And I want to be very clear right now, upgrading your storage is the hardest part of this. Upgrading management, upgrading compute, actually not that bad. Upgrading storage is the thing that you're going to have to think about most, the thing that you're going to have to do the most planning around. So we have a bunch of technologies here, but they all have interesting trade-offs. And you need to understand what those trade-offs are, because you don't want to go down one of these paths without accounting for the trade-offs. And this is a little grid. So some of these allow you to upgrade with no downtime. Some of them have some downtime. Some of them require a lot of hardware. Some of them don't. So let's step through some of the options that we know of and that we're talking about to people. So first one is, hey, we have storage migration. You can just use storage migration. Move your virtual machines, move their storage from 2012 to 2012 R2, zero downtime. Fantastic. However, to do this, you need more hardware. And unfortunately, what you need more hardware of is the most expensive thing in your data center. It's the storage. Now, I don't think anyone here is particularly keen on the idea of let's go out and double my storage for an upgrade. If you're lucky and you have the storage capacity around, great, this is a simple option. Most people I talk to, this is not an option because of the hardware requirement. So that's one extreme. You've got a lot of hardware, we can do it easy. The other extreme is you got no hardware and you just want to do it in place. And here we have the copy cluster roles option. Now, this does involve downtime, but it's actually a very small amount of downtime. This one, and I'll be demonstrating copy cluster roles later on, a lot of people see this option, and they think, that's going to be like hours, if not days, of downtime. You can actually get the downtime here into the 5 minutes vicinity. But there is downtime. The process for this is that what copy cluster roles does is it actually allows you to move your storage across. We're showing this with storage spaces. It equally works with SANs and so on. But it allows you to pre-stage the configuration. So you get everything set up, and you're able to literally shut down your existing storage, start up your new storage, and go. So it's the downtime is basically the time that it takes to shut down one cluster and start up another. It is downtime, but it is limited. So the next option for the people who really want no hardware is upgrade in place. So this is actually something that I'm going to be talking through more in the Hyper-V section, is the concept that if you have a cluster, you have the option to split it, do an in-place upgrade, and start moving stuff across. Now, in the case of storage, this also involves downtime. But once again, it's a very short period of downtime, and this one has zero hardware requirement. Now, an interesting thing, and I know I'm about to say something unpopular. Everyone, I mean, anyone who's worked in server IT for any amount of time will tell you, you never do an in-place upgrade. You always do a clean install of Windows Server. You know, nuke, install, so on. And let me tell you, I actually had a team of testers testing all these options. And for 2012 to 2012 R2, there are a lot of pros to doing an in-place upgrade. So in this case, imagine, you know, I had a 2012 cluster, you know, that was running my storage. I evict a node. If I do an in-place upgrade, you know, just install 2012 R2 over top of that, what have I just guaranteed? Well, I've guaranteed all my storage drivers are the same. All my storage driver configuration is maintained. All the settings for the HBAs, for the mapping, for the pulls, for whatever, is maintained. I don't have to go in and reconfigure all of that. I don't have to go and find the drivers. I don't have to go. It's all there. So something to consider. I know in-place upgrade is kind of, it's a four-letter word in the server IT world. But, you know, we've been doing a lot of testing on this, and time again, we've seen, hey, doing an in-place upgrade, you know, can actually really simplify this process. So you can move the storage across using copy cluster roles, and then your availability is restored. The final option, this one is kind of an interesting option. And by interesting, I mean it's a little bit crazy. I'll be honest about this. When we were working on 2012 R2, we were looking at the storage problem, and we were really scratching our heads and going, okay, how can we do this? How can we upgrade a scale-out file server with no new hardware and with zero downtime? And we actually figured out a way to do it. And what it actually involves is, now in this diagram, I'm showing this with storage spaces. You can also do this if you're using Fibre Channel, if you're using LUNs, et cetera. What it actually involves is, let's say you have a scale-out file server, and you have storage spaces, or if you're not using storage spaces, where that says pool, you can imagine that it says LUN. What you can do is first, you know, split the cluster, move the nodes out, upgrade them to R2, create an R2 cluster. Now, using storage migration, evacuate one of the pools or evacuate one of the LUNs. Move that across. Then migrate the storage across and repeat this process. So we've actually tested this process. And yeah, it allows you with zero hardware to get from zero new hardware to get from 2012 to 2012 R2. A couple of things to call out, though. First thing, you may have noticed some of these diagrams have had a two-node storage cluster, some have had a four. Reality is, for most people, you have a two-node cluster, storage cluster. If you have a two-node storage cluster, this upgrade process does degrade availability. You don't have high availability throughout the process. You only get high availability throughout the process if you have a four-node storage cluster, because then I can split it and have high availability on either side. Now, when I presented this at TechEd US, you know, I had the guy come up and afterwards and be like, well, I've got a three-node Hyper-V cluster, and you're saying I should have a four-node storage cluster? No. No, you know, this is where the scale discussion comes in. You know, the reality is, in my mind, having a dedicated storage cluster only makes sense once you're looking at least six or seven Hyper-V servers. You know, if you have three or four Hyper-V servers, you're just going to be using CSV directly attached to your Hyper-V cluster. Having a four-node file server only makes sense, you know, if you're looking at like 16-plus Hyper-V servers. So for the smaller deployments, this is where you're going to have to make the call of, do I maintain availability throughout and buy some extra hardware? Or do I accept that for the process, there's going to be degraded high availability? The next thing to talk about here is with this process of, actually, I like that slide better. With this process of moving one pool across at a time, as I said, with storage spaces, we call them pools. With SANs, this would be LUNs. A couple of observations. The first one is, if you're using SANs and you have thin provisioning, in theory, you can make this really simple. Because in theory, you could just go, OK, I've got a SAN on the back end. It supports thin provisioning. What I'm going to do is, I've already got a thin provision LUN where my virtual machines are stored. I'm going to eject a node from my storage cluster or from my Hyper-V cluster. I'm going to set up a single node. I'm going to create a new thin provision LUN. And then I'm going to storage migrate across. You know, and the SAN's going to do its magic on the back end, and fine. And when that works, and we have seen this work, it's beautiful. Warning, though, not all SANs are created equal. What we've seen in our testing is some SANs, with their thin provisioning technology, you can do this. Create two thin provision LUNs, move VMs across using storage migration, and it all works. Other SANs, however, things we've seen, because we've been testing this a lot, we've seen thin provision SANs where, yeah, they only free up the space after a couple of hours. You know, so you do a storage migration across, and for an hour or two afterwards, it's using the space on both sides, because they're going through and they're lazily freeing up the space. The other one we've seen, and this one was really nasty, is some of the SANs with their thin provisioning will only shrink a thin provisioned volume down to the last used sector. So if you storage migrate out a VM that's in the middle of the disk, it doesn't make a difference. So I would just give a word of caution there. If you're thinking, hey, I've got a SAN, I use thin provisioning, I could do thin provisioning, double check, do some testing. No, I would, like, really simple test, just, you know, throw up a couple of more thin provision LUNs and just move 10, 20 gig of data around between them and watch what's happening on the back end to see, would that actually work for me? So assuming that you either don't have a SAN that supports thin provisioning, or you're unfortunate and your SAN has not the greatest thin provisioning, how would you accommodate for this in your environment? Well, the key thing here in this diagram is you see I have multiple pools configured. You know, if you think about a deployment, and unfortunately this is the most logical deployment if you're not thinking about upgrade, if your SAN doesn't support thin provisioning, and you just created one big fixed provision LUN that uses all the SAN, there's no good way to upgrade that. There really isn't. However, and this comes back into the aspect of you can design for upgrade. If, when you're designing the system, you go, OK, I'm going to need to upgrade this. I'm going to want to have some flexibility. Rather than having a single big LUN, I'm going to carve this up into four or five medium-sized LUNs. Then that gives you the ability to go in, you know, evacuate, move LUNs across, play around with this. It gives you some more flexibility. The final thing that I want, observation that I want to make about this strategy, and honestly, this is, for most storage people, this is the biggest consideration, is in order to do this, in order to do a zero downtime, zero new hardware upgrade of your storage, you are going to copy all your data over the network. That is not a nice proposition. It really isn't. You know, the reality is, one, you know, copying data over a network is dangerous. It just is. There's always an inherent risk in that. And two, when you do the math and figure out how long it's going to take for you to copy all your data over your network, it's going to be a long time. You know, for the average private cloud deployment, you know, you're probably going to be looking at a week or two. Most customers, I've actually now sat down with a number of customers and, you know, whiteboarded and talked through the options to figure out, like, okay, how are we going to upgrade your storage? Most customers are coming to one of two conclusions, actually one of three conclusions. Conclusion number one, you know what? We're not going to buy double storage for upgrade, but we are going to buy a bit to just kind of smooth this process out. Number two, this one actually is I would say, the most common one that I'm hearing, is number two, when people look at this, they go, you know what? If I look at my infrastructure, I do have different level SLAs for different VMs. And for 80% of my VMs, I'm completely OK to shut them down, have a 5-minute downtime, do that upgrade quickly, and get that over and done with. For 20% of my VMs, I'm going to go with this approach. And it'll take a little time, but those VMs are important, and we'll have zero downtime. Number three, and I mentioned this at the beginning, is there are some people who are looking at this and going, you know what? We're just going to leave the storage alone. You know, we're not willing to bite that off. We're going to continue running our storage on 2012, and we'll upgrade when we do a hardware upgrade for the storage. As I said, this isn't going to be a rosy presentation. These are the options that exist. So, upgrading compute. Thankfully, this is a lot easier conversation. So you have a Hyper-V cluster. We support cross-version live migration. That is our upgrade story. You know, cross-version live migration works cross-cluster, works shared nothing. It's the easiest way. So as I just to highlight, you know, as I mentioned, you can upgrade compute and storage separately. You can do them both at the same time. We support cross-cluster, cross-version, shared nothing live migration. So if that's the path you want to go with, that's available. Personally, as a risk-averse person, I would say don't do that. No, do your compute and your storage separately so that you can, you know, keep a very close eye on the process. So the basic process that we're recommending is very similar to the last diagram I showed you, is, you know, you have a bunch of virtual machines, you have a Hyper-V cluster, you're just going to first evacuate some of the nodes in your source cluster, eject those nodes, upgrade them, and then you're going to start using cross-version live migration to move everything across. So some observations here. First observation, and as I said, I know that this is, you know, a four-letter word in the IT world, and I'm going to say it again, seriously consider in-place upgrade. In the case of your Hyper-V servers, doing an in-place upgrade means you do not have to reconfigure virtual networking. That's actually a big one. You know, you've got all your virtual network stuff defined. You've got all your Hyper-V settings configured. You know, when you, let me jump back. When you eject these two boxes from the cluster, like, they're perfect. They are currently, right now, perfectly configured for Hyper-V for your environment. If you format those and reinstall, then you're going to have some manual steps to get them reconfigured. And as we all know, manual steps introduce opportunities for errors. Now, if you do an in-place upgrade, then we're going to pull all those settings across and make sure they're there for R2. So the next thing is, you'll notice that in this diagram, I've done an 8-node Hyper-V cluster. Because in all honesty, to meet all the assumptions that I stated at the beginning, you know, maintain HA throughout, keep SLA, zero downtime, zero new hardware, I think the smallest deployment where that's reasonable is an 8-node cluster. And as I said, I happen to know that most people, it's a 3-node cluster. So what are, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we'll discuss that in a moment. The final thing to point out with this strategy is integration services. So we support cross-version live migration, and now you've got your virtual machine across, but it has the previous version integration services. Now, it'd be pretty stupid if you went to all the effort of doing a cross-version live migration, and the first thing you did on the other side was upgrade integration services and reboot the VM. So what we're recommending is that you do the cross-version live migration, and after you've done that, you actually stage the integration services. So I've got the command here. You can run this, and it will put down the next version of the integration components, but it won't reboot the VM. And this is a fully supported thing. You keep the virtual machine running. It's running on the previous version of the integration components. And then you just wait for a natural reboot to happen because of some other configuration change in the virtual machine that the user of the virtual machine is in control of. Once you've run this command, virtual machine's going to keep on running happily, and next time it reboots, it's going to come up with the latest version of the integration services. So what are the alternate approaches if you're not in the 8-node cluster situation? You can start with a 1-node 2012 R2 cluster. You can say, okay, I'm going to accept degraded high availability for the upgrade process. Honestly, I think this is what most people with a 3-node cluster are going to do. You go a 3-node cluster, you're going to evacuate one of the nodes in your 2012 or 2008 R2 cluster. You're going to create a single node 2012 R2 cluster, move the virtual machines across. And for the upgrade process, you're not going to have high availability. But once you're completed, you'll be there. You can also buy new hardware to act as a seed. So, you know, let's say you've got, say, a 5-node cluster. Go, maybe what you want to do is just buy one new server. Buy one new server, eject one server from your 5-node cluster, create a 2-node cluster. And now you're able to do the process with maintaining availability throughout. Another thing to consider is to take advantage of safe state compatibility. And this comes back to, you know, once you start going down into the nuts and bolts, all virtual machines aren't created equal. You know, we have the virtual machines that we really care about, and we have the virtual machines that we don't. You know, so maybe what you decide is, hey, there's a bunch of virtual machines where I'm fine that at the beginning of the process, I'm going to just throw them in a safe state, and I'll restore that safe state at the end of the process. That's going to free up some resource so that I can ensure that the most important virtual machines, I'm meeting the SLAs, I'm meeting the high availability statement. A final observation here, and this catches a lot of people by surprise. I've actually had some really interesting discussions with the cluster team about this. To do a full validation of a cluster, takes the storage offline if you're using CSV. So if your storage is directly attached to your Hyper-V cluster, doing a full validation, that's a problem. Because, you know, if I'm trying to do this with zero downtime, so some observations here. The first one is, hey, let me pitch scale out file server. Because if you're doing scale out file server on the back end, you can upgrade your compute cluster and fully validate it, and it doesn't take the storage down. Now, on the flip side, I've talked with some of the principal program managers on the cluster team, and their personal belief is, you know, if you do a cluster validation and you exclude the storage, then that's a reasonable thing to do. My response to them was, get that written up in a KB article and I will believe you. It hasn't been written up in a KB article yet. So I am pushing them on that because I would love to see that written up in a KB article because I think it would make a lot of people's lives easier if we could say, yeah, you know, if the cluster's functioning and you have validation on everything but the storage, then you're in a good place. They haven't published that article yet, so that is not, you know, Microsoft gospel. But it is something to be aware of. To do full validation of a cluster does take the storage offline. So now I want to talk about 2008 R2 to 2012 R2. So a key thing to understand here is with 2012 to 2012 R2, we have storage migration, we have cross-version live migration. We don't have either of those with 2008 R2 to 2012 R2. So any upgrade from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2 is going to involve downtime. That's unfortunately unavoidable. So what I would like to talk about is how do we minimize that downtime? How do we manage that downtime? I don't know why I put my clicker down. So your primary tool here is going to be the copy cluster roles wizard. And this is actually, honestly, this is something that I get the most questions about. For the last two tech ads running, the most common question that I get from people walking up to me is, hi, I have a three-node 2008 R2 cluster. How do I upgrade it? And the answer is using the techniques that I've discussed here and using the copy cluster roles wizard. So if you've got a 2008 R2 cluster, three-node with a CSV volume, first thing you're going to do, I'm assuming that you don't want to buy new hardware, you don't want to buy new compute, you don't want to buy new storage, you are accepting that in this scenario there's going to be some downtime. So what you're going to do, the first thing is you go to your cluster, you're going to evacuate one of the nodes, move it over to the other two nodes, you're going to eject that node from the cluster, and you're going to upgrade that cluster to 2012 R2, sorry, that node to 2012 R2, and then you're going to use the copy cluster roles wizard. Now, the surprising thing is, a lot of people see the copy cluster roles wizard, and as I said, a lot of people assume that this process is going to involve a lot of downtime. It really doesn't. You know, you can do this process, you know, with 5-10 minutes downtime. So copy cluster role wizard supports back to 2008 R2. They always support N minus 2. So a couple of key things to point out here. It's actually a very flexible tool. You can actually use this in a test mode. You can do 90% of the upgrade process without taking your source virtual machines offline. So as you're thinking about this and planning this, you can play around with it. You can see what it's involved with. And in fact, I would really encourage you to do this. Because when it comes time to actually pull the trigger on the upgrade, you want to make sure that you've got everything down. You know, you don't want to be doing this the first time on your live production system. You want to make sure that you've tried this through, you've practiced it. The process is reversible. So even if you hit a problem doing this live, you can roll back. You know, so that's a key thing to understand. So some assumptions. This does assume that you're not doing new storage. It does, the copy cluster role wizard assumes you're using the same storage and that your goal is to migrate everything across. If you're not using the same storage, that's when you need to be looking at stuff like storage migration. So the process here. Here I've got, we're doing this two-node, but as I said, most common is three-node. So I'm going to evacuate a node. This is someone else's diagram. It doesn't have evacuation. So imagine we evacuated and moved across. The key thing here is you've got a three-node cluster. You evacuate a node. You eject it from the cluster. You upgrade it to 2012 R2, either with a clean install or an upgrade in place. Now, at this stage, that node that you've moved across is already wired up to your storage. It's already wired up to your network. It's got everything in place. You go through the copy cluster roles wizard and you say, I want to move these virtual machines across. Now, the interesting thing that a lot of people miss is you do this while the virtual machines are actually still running. You don't have to turn off the virtual machines at this stage. The virtual machines are still running. You say, I want to move these virtual machines across. And what this does is the copy cluster roles wizard goes and pulls out all the data that it needs to know about those virtual machines, and it gets everything staged and ready to go. And only once everything is staged and ready to go, and you can actually go through, you can do validation, you can make sure that this is okay, there is the final step is where you shut down the VMs on the source and start them on the destination. And so, you know, we like to joke, we teased each other about this demo. You know, you can do this as fast as you can move your mouse. You know, it is shut down and go start up. So I'm actually going to skip forward. I have, I'm going to cheat today. I'm using a video for this. And hopefully I remember the number to switch to. Just a second. Perfect. So this is, we did this demo live in at TechEd US, and I don't have access to the system. So here we have a 2008 R2 cluster, and we have a 2012 cluster. We're just going to log into the 2008 R2 cluster and show you that we're not faking it. It really is a 2008 R2 cluster. And we actually have a bunch of virtual machines running here, and they're configured on different a couple of different cluster shared volumes. Now, key thing to call out here, the migration process, you're actually going to drive this from your 2012 R2 server. So we're just logging in to show you that, yes, this isn't smoke and mirrors. There really is a 2008 R2 server there behind the scenes. So for this demo, you can assume this is a three-node cluster. We've already ejected one of the nodes. We've already upgraded it to 2012 R2. We've created a single-node 2012 R2 cluster. And now we're ready to use the copy cluster roles wizard in order to bring those virtual machines across. So we go to copy cluster roles, and we're going to point this at our 2008 R2 server, our 2008 R2 cluster. Just a moment. Imagine that I'm typing at a keyboard. So this is going to go out, and it's going to discover all the virtual machines that are stored on it. It'll actually discover all the roles, but I'm assuming for the purposes of upgrading a private cloud that you only have virtual machines on there. Now, a key thing to understand here is because we assume that you're using the same storage and because we're not actually moving the data in this process, we require that you migrate all virtual machines that are on a single volume. We don't allow you to pull across one virtual machine and leave another one. And you're actually going to see that if you select one of these virtual machines, we automatically select all the other virtual machines that are on that cluster shared volume. Because this process is really about pulling the storage across. So you might also notice if you're attentive that we've been a bit tricky for this demo and we set up one volume which has one virtual machine so we can demo this nice and quickly. So we're going to, you know, but for most people, you're probably going to have a single cluster shared volume. All your virtual machines are on there. You're going to do this in one hit. We just do this with a single virtual machine so that it's an easier thing to demo. We do allow you to do some basic reconfiguration. You can go in and configure virtual networking if that's changed. A key thing to understand, the copy cluster roles wizard is going to go ahead and it's going to pre-create these virtual machines for us. They're going to be in an offline state. Here we provide you the way to fix up the network. If, as part of the upgrade, there's any other setting you need to change, you can actually go and do that on these virtual machines before you pull the trigger and do the upgrade. So we have a nice little validation report that tells you what we did, and you can go through and check that everything was okay. Sweet. When we hit finish, what you're going to see, and keep in mind, this is, we're on the 2012 R2 cluster. There's the virtual machine. This virtual machine is still running on the 2008 R2 cluster now. We have an offline resource configured here. There's the disk, offline resource. You know, still running on the 2008 R2 cluster. Now, at this stage, I can back out of it. Nothing's actually being committed yet. But now that this is all set up, and assuming I've gone through and checked all the settings, the final step is now I shut down my virtual machines, I take them offline on the 2008 R2 cluster, and I bring them online on the 2012 R2 cluster. So this is the window of downtime. You know, up until now, there's been no downtime. First, you need to shut down your virtual machines. Once they've shut down, you need to offline the disk resource. So once that's completely offline on the source cluster, then you go over to the destination cluster and you online the resource. Very simple process. And as you can see, this downtime, as I said, we like to joke. For demo purpose, the downtime is as fast or slow as you are with your mouse. If you were doing this for just a single cluster deployment, you're probably going to do it this way. If you have a couple of clusters to do, you're probably going to want to look at scripting this just in order to minimize that downtime. So this comes online, and once it's online, the migration has completed. Actually, that's a really good question. This demo doesn't use VMM. You can do this with or without VMM. So VMM actually supports doing this migration through VMM, but this is also supported without VMM. But there you see, virtual machines now online on the 2012 R2 cluster. Let me switch across. Excellent. So, couple of things in summary that I want to make, points that I want to make here. First thing is, I know that this hasn't been the most positive, shiny presentation, but I do want to highlight it is possible. You can upgrade your private cloud. If you're going 2012 to 2012 R2, you can do it with zero downtime. If you're going 2008 R2 to 2012 R2, you can do it with minimal downtime. However, the key message for you guys is it requires planning. You know, do not get up tomorrow and go, yeah, I'm going to upgrade my system to 2012 R2. This is going to be fantastic. No. Think through it. Look into the resources. Understand what the trade-offs are. So I've actually finished up a little early just to leave some extra time for questions, because we usually have a lot of questions here. So boring related content. At this stage, questions about upgrading your private cloud?
Next time, can you demo VMware to Server 2012?
Next time, can I demo VMware to Server 2012? We actually had a separate session yesterday, I believe, on migrating VMware to Hyper-V.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, you missed it. Yeah. We did have a session on specifically on VMware to Hyper-V migration. Any other? Come in, you guys. I finished early, so we'd have questions. There we go.
So presenting the CSV from the 2008 R2 cluster to the 2012 one is no big deal because you're not doing anything with the storage until you're online. Is that right?
Correct. So the question is, there is no complication with moving the CSV volume from 2008 R2 to 2012 R2. Now, we have made a number of architectural changes around CSV. Thankfully, very minimal changes to the actual format on disk. the changes have been to the drivers and the code running. So once you've done that migration, you can actually take a CSV volume back. Hopefully you don't need to. It is a fully reversible process, so if you needed to undo it and take it back, that would work. But yes, until you do the final online on the 2012 R2 cluster, it's not even touched by the 2012 R2 cluster. But it is a process, it just comes up fine.
And there's nothing we have to do with CSV afterwards?
No, there's no preparation and there's no afterward steps for the CSV volume. It just comes across. So any other questions?
Having said that, what storage migration, I guess I don't understand part of the content of the slides about when you're talking about storage.
So storage migration is a feature in Hyper-V where we let you move the VHD files with zero downtime.
So when you're talking about migrating storage in a CSV scenario, you're not actually doing it to the backend storage as such.
And that's the key thing to understand is With the zero downtime option, we're getting zero downtime by using Hyper-V storage migration to move that data over the network. With the downtime options, that's where we're not moving the data, and we're basically unplugging the disk from your previous cluster and plugging it into your new one. And at the heart of it, that's one of the biggest decisions that you have to make is, am I willing to do that network transfer to avoid downtime, or am I going to take the downtime to do it quickly without moving the data over the network? At the end of the day, that's the biggest decision that you have to make around what path you're going to go down.
Before you said about sharing CSVs, what about sharing quorum? Is that possible between 208 and 212?
So the question is, what about sharing quorum? No, that is impossible. You do need to set up a separate quorum disk. In most deployments, though, the quorum is like a very small LUN, so I haven't heard that being an issue. But you do need to, it's correct, you do need to set up a separate quorum for the new cluster.
Does using SMB3 share help with what
you just showed? Absolutely. Yeah. And this is a key thing to understand is this is all easier with a scale-out file server in place. You know, the challenge is scale-out file server for your storage only makes sense at certain scale points. You know, honestly, if you have under 6 Hyper-V nodes in your environment, a scale-out file server doesn't make sense. You know, if you're in the 3 to 5 ballpark, then you're going to want to be using CSV volumes directly connected to your Hyper-V servers. Once you get above 6, I really encourage people to be looking at scale-out file servers. It brings a lot to the table. It does make the upgrade process a heck of a lot easier. You don't have to be offlining an online CSV. You can bring across single virtual machines at a time. It simplifies the process a lot. What do I do about my Hyper-V? Actually, that's a really good question. I just realized I should have talked about Hyper-V Replica. I didn't talk about it because at TechEd US, we had a separate session where we talked about upgrading Hyper-V Replica. And I don't have that session here. So let me actually talk about that because that's an important thing to know. Something to understand about Hyper-V Replica is there are two parts to Hyper-V Replica. There's the replication of the VM configuration, which only happens when you create a replica relationship. And then there's the replication of the storage, which is ongoing. Strangely enough, for Hyper-V Replica, for upgrade scenarios, it's the configuration that's the tricky part, not the data. So if you have replica in your environment, you have to be very careful about the upgrade order. So what you want to do if you have replica in your environment is you upgrade the recovery site first. If you upgrade the recovery site first, and then you upgrade the primary site second, then we're able to maintain the replica relationship, and you have replica protection throughout the whole process. If you upgrade the primary site first, the challenge to understand here, because I know some people are going to do this and it's going to kind of work. So if you upgrade the primary site first, replica may continue to work and you may be okay. However, while you're in the mode of primary site on 2012R2, secondary recovery site on 2012, if replica needs to do a resync for any reason, that resync's going to fail because resync will try and resend the configuration. So if it's the other way around, though, if your primary site's on 2012 and your recovery site's on 2012R2, resync will still work. So you have full protection in that mode. So that's our recommendation for replica. And as a side note, I've actually talked to a number of people about this. Most people are fairly happy with that because they go, hey, I can use my recovery site to test out the upgrade process because it's my recovery site. You know, it's not my primary site. My primary site's going to keep on running. I'm going to go through the upgrade process on my recovery site. If something goes catastrophically wrong, no, I hope it doesn't, but if something goes catastrophically wrong, then I rebuild my recovery site. You know, and my virtual machines keep on running the whole way through. So really good question. Thank you for that. Okay, we're running out of questions, so I'm going to wrap up. Thank you all for your time, and I hope this has been an informative session for you. As I said, I know it's not the rosiest message in the world, but I do want to make sure that you know exactly what you need to be aware of for this scenario.